At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Marketplace is supported by RingCentral, the cloud communications system that integrates with CRM, sales, and support applications like Salesforce, Zendesk, Box, and now Google for Work. More at ringcentral.com.
What happened this week? We'll tell you live. The business of education at the GOP debates, and who do you like in the Oscars on Sunday night? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price. In today's uncertain markets, institutions, advisors, and individuals choose T. Rowe Price to find global investment opportunities. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence. And by Squarespace. Squarespace, providing tools that help people showcase their passions with a customizable landing page, website, or online store. Learn more at squarespace.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com.
In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 26th of February. Good as always to have you with us, everybody. 5 days in the life of the global economy, 4 minutes of live radio. Sudeep Reddy is with the Wall Street Journal. Neela Richardson is at Redfin. They are both in our bureau in Washington, District of Columbia for our weekly wrap. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, Neela, let me start with you, and I'm just going to throw some numbers at you here. GDP, gross domestic product, was out this morning. It's a 1% growth rate, not great, but, you know, revised upwards. Housing's up. Consumer spending is up. There's a tad of inflation in this economy. It's not so bad anymore, huh?
Yeah, it's not so bad. It's not so good, but it's not so
bad. She says lukewarmly.
It's lukewarmly.
Wow.
You know, the major problem with the economy right now is the level of uncertainty. So that revision to GDP is based on inventories.
Yep.
And we don't know whether companies were holding inventories because they're excited about the future or they didn't sell enough in the past.
Huh.
And so what do those stockpiles actually mean? A lot of banks are revising down their GDP forecast for the first quarter. And we're still waiting for more information to see exactly what 2016 holds.
Wow. All right. Well, I was expecting better, you know, like more upbeat than that. But let me throw another one at you, Sudeep. Oil had its best week in 6 months, up like 10%. West Texas Intermediate. That's got to be a good thing.
It can be a good thing for the global economy, for markets. There's been a lot of uncertainty about what cheap oil would mean, not just for the economy, but for financial markets, whether it was going to create a slide in junk bonds. And we're actually starting to see oil do what it normally does, which is pick up after hitting what might have been a bottom, partly because they're seeing some signs of the big producers in the Middle East realizing that they can't let this go on forever, and maybe they're going to have to cut back and play a role that they once did. They're not quite there yet. But also you're seeing the big producers in the U.S. start to throw in the towel. So we've seen it in North Dakota. We've seen it in other big oil-producing states. They're recognizing that if oil is between $30 and $40 a barrel, they're not going to survive at those rates. So they're going to hold off for a little while and maybe come back and revisit this on another day when oil is a bit higher.
All right. So let's back up for a minute here, Neela, because I think like 6 weeks ago I had you two on a Friday, and I asked the first in a series of questions that I asked our rappers about the R word, about recession. And both of you said, nah, it's not going to happen. I was like, okay, fine. And now today I'm being upbeat and you guys are like, Help me out.
Yeah. You know, you can be a little lukewarm without bringing in the R word.
Okay.
And there are some bright spots in the economy. We saw that consumer spending picked up. We got some nice inflation numbers tied to personal incomes. That's really important.
Right.
And home sales were very strong to start the year. So all of that kind of shines a bright light on some lackluster GDP growth. I mean, there is a middle ground between recession and good, and I think we're about there.
And Neil's point is all right there, that we're actually starting 2016 a little bit better than we ended 2015.
Yeah.
That's a good sign that we came into the year thinking we were going down the tubes, and we're actually stabilizing a little bit more. So we should look on the bright side.
All right. And next Friday is Jobs Day, just to remind everybody. Sudeep, I want to finish with you and ask you about Apple, not about the merits of the case, not about any of that, but about Congress and whether there is any doubt in your mind that this all winds up in some way, shape, or form in the halls of Congress for a larger policy privacy access debate.
It absolutely will end up in Congress. And the real question is whether it ends up in Congress in an environment like we're in now, where you can actually discuss the merits of instituting some of these changes that the federal government wants, or taking what Apple and a lot of other tech companies are saying of making sure that there's more there's tight security and encryption.
Right.
The thing that we're facing now is you can either have this debate now in this environment, or you can have it later, potentially after some kind of national security event. And if you have it later, we know there will be very little actual debate about it, like we saw after 9/11, and none of that can be undone. So that's why so many tech companies are really rushing to latch on to this moment to discuss what is privacy, what is encryption, how many backdoors do you want into our system, not just for the U.S. government. Most Americans are actually relatively comfortable with the U.S. government having some of this ability. Not all of it, but some of it.
You know where to send your letters, folks.
But what we really get into is what happens when you create the backdoors that allow Russians in, that allow Chinese in. There are a lot of actors in other countries that have gotten in, and figuring out where that line is of where Americans are actually comfortable is where it's quite difficult.
I'm going to get the hook here if I don't get out of here. So we got to go. Sudeep Reddy at the Wall Street Journal and Neil Richardson at Redfin. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
All right. Have a good weekend. Wall Street Today, not quite the oomph it's had in the past couple of days. Mixed will be the music. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. If you saw the Republican debate last night, first of all, holy cow, was that amazing or what? But also, somebody clearly lit a fire under Marco Rubio. He went after and after and after Donald Trump.
You're a lousy
I don't know anything about bankrupting four companies.
No,
you bankrupted four companies.
You know what?
I don't know anything about starting a university.
That was a fake university. That's called. Okay,
there are people that borrowed $36,000 to go to Trump University, and they're suing him now.
Trump University goes by another name now, the Trump Entrepreneur Initiative. And as Senator Rubio said, it faces several lawsuits alleging that the people who took its real estate investing courses didn't get what they paid for. So from the education desk at WYPR, Marketplace's Amy Scott gets us the update.
Back in 2008, near the bottom of the real estate market, Robert Strupp saw an ad for Trump University offering a free seminar on how to make money buying homes facing foreclosure.
So I took advantage of that, went down to the hotel ballroom where the course was being offered.
Not as a potential investor, Strupp worked for Baltimore's Community Law Center, fighting predatory real estate programs. He says much of the two-hour course was spent encouraging people to sign up for more expensive CDs and elite courses with their credit cards.
Several dozen probably went back and gave them their credit card. It was shocking and disturbing to see it, but yes, they did.
Not long after, the states of Maryland and New York forced the company to drop the word university from its name. The New York Attorney General has a $40 million fraud case still pending, and Trump may be called as a witness this spring in a class action lawsuit brought by dissatisfied customers. Last night, Trump called the lawsuit nonsense and promised to win, but he's running on his record as a businessman. Republican strategist Matt McDonald says the attacks could hurt.
Anytime there's criticism, revelations, concerns about something that is a core attribute that a candidate is running on, that is a big problem for the candidate. And that's true for Donald Trump, too.
McDonald would know. He was an advisor to Mitt Romney, whose 2012 presidential campaign suffered from Romney's work at private equity firm Bain Capital. McDonald says now that Trump is the clear Republican frontrunner, expect to hear a lot more about Trump University. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
There's a very special announcement coming tomorrow morning, a letter that possibly millions of people are waiting for. And even in this age of apps and social media, it is, in fact, a letter. Yes, one that's going to be posted online, but still a letter from Warren Buffett to shareholders in Berkshire Hathaway, Buffett's holding company. Buffett's long-term value investing has made a lot of people a lot of money, which helps explain why they're all waiting for that letter. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has the story.
At Berkshire Hathaway's annual shareholder meeting, people buy rubber duckies shaped like Warren Buffett. You can get Berkshire Hathaway bras. They're called Berkey bras. This is the level of enthusiasm around this company. So when once a year these people get to hear directly from Warren Buffett himself...
It's like the release of a new Harry Potter book for a kid.
People wait for this like it's Christmas Eve.
About a million people download it.
That's Ravi Jain, professor at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, Meb Faber with Cambria Investment, and Lawrence Cunningham, professor at George Washington University. Cunningham says people like Buffett because he's likable.
He certainly has projected an image as folksy, you know, like an uncle figure who gives you good advice. And the thing that is really striking to me about it, because I know him pretty well, is that it's true.
Oh, and there's also the fact that he's the third wealthiest man in America worth $50 billion. Cambria Investments, Meb Faber.
Well, first, he's wickedly smart. But no matter what everyone is drawn to is the performance. Berkshire has had massive outperformance over the S&P.
Berkshire Hathaway has 60 direct subsidiaries and thousands of indirect ones. So Buffett's letter and Berkshire's earnings are a little bit like economic indicators of their own. University of Massachusetts, Ravi Jain.
He owns so many businesses that he has a very good pulse on the U.S. economy. And his way of looking at long-term, I think, is just a good way to reset your compass and figure out where the world is and where the world is going.
And with every market swing recently bringing another twist to the knife for investors, a calm, sensible bit of folksy wisdom is just what a lot of people could use right about now. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Speaking of folksy, that's what he's like in real life. We had him on the show a couple of years ago, Warren Buffett. It's on our website under the Mentioned On Air tab over on the left-hand side. As Americans become more interested in what we eat, where it comes from, how it was grown or harvested, food companies and retailers are following suit, demanding of their suppliers sustainably farmed produce, humanely raised animals, non-GMO crops, you know the deal. It is a truism, though, that stuff rolls downhill, and the ultimate producers of what winds up on our tables, farmers and ranchers, are most definitely not on board with all that. Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports.
Reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
A few months ago, a bunch of people with ties to agriculture were gathered at a conference in Minneapolis. They were talking about making food production more sustainable.
Let's find out how he's going to do that. Welcome, John.
John Church, an executive at General Mills, was trumpeting his company's push to reduce greenhouse gas emissions throughout its supply chain, from its dairy producers on up. He said consumer demand was driving a lot of the changes.
We had to have intention because our consumers needed us to go there. Because our employees needed us to go there.
Big food execs like Church seem to actually welcome consumers' influence on their operations. But a number of people in the room seem to feel otherwise. Like this fellow, David Shem, from the National Association of Wheat Growers. He complained consumers' concerns were too faddish to be taken so seriously.
Many of them can change their opinion five times in one conversation. I don't change my cropping practice five times in one year.
This tension over who knows best, the consumer or the farmer, kept coming up. And at one point later in the conference, during a session I couldn't record, an audience member got a little confrontational. It was following a panel of speakers from several big food companies.
Well, I think the comment that I made was that, you know, we've got an awful lot of these food companies, food processors or whatever, that seem to be very quick to throw the producer under the bus, if you will.
Bob Young is senior economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation. He says food processors and retailers are issuing a lot of edicts these days about how farmers need to raise their livestock or grow their crops differently, often citing consumer concerns about things like sustainability or animal welfare. But he says farmers aren't always asked if the changes are practical.
We're going to change how we're going to ask you to farm, and we're not really going to ask you whether or not you can or you can't, either from a physical standpoint or from a fiscal standpoint, you know. can you do it actually in the real world, and can you afford to pay for it? We don't really care. We're just going to demand that you do it.
Young's complaints strike a chord with Randy Sprunk. He's a hog farmer in Minnesota.
Thrown under the bus, that's the feeling that you get once in a while.
Sprunk says it's not just that farmers feel left out of the conversation, but they're also getting really confusing signals about what they're supposed to do differently.
Retailer A wants a sow that's in a pen. Retailer B wants one antibiotic-free. Retailer C wants the sow to be outside. Which one do I listen to? I only got one pig.
Sprunk actually has nearly 100,000 pigs. But when he says he's only got one, he means he only raises them one way. He then markets them to several different meat packers, who in turn sell parts like the ham, the loin, or the bacon to a whole bunch of domestic and international food service and retail end markets. If one food retailer wants bacon from pigs who've never touched GMO feed, the whole pig has to be raised that way, even if the other retailers don't care about the GMO thing.
I can't do it just to their particular cut that they need. I need it to do it to the entire pig. So then it becomes the rest of the pig, who's going to pay for the higher cost?
Adding to the frustration among farmers is the sense that some of the prescriptions to do things differently strike them as unnecessary. They think they're already following best practices.
The first thing I hear from producers, from growers, is, I'm already sustainable. Why do I need to do this? And my reply back is, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but we need your data to prove it.
Stephanie Millie Grant is with Unilever Corporation. She's also chair of the board of Field to Market. It's an organization that helps farmers do things like use less water or fertilizer. Grant says highlighting the economic benefits along with the environmental ones can help mitigate farmers' frustrations.
Absolutely, especially if you can tie it to economics and the bottom line. If you can show by doing this you're actually going to save money or your yields will increase, things like that, that absolutely helps.
But Randy Sprunk, the hog farmer, says the financial benefits of changing his ways aren't clear to him yet.
And so, quite frankly, until the marketplace wants to incentivize me or send a clear signal, I'm going to sit on my hands, continue to raise the pigs as my father and grandfather did.
In other words, he needs to be paid enough to change how he does business. He says so far, that's not happening. In St. Paul, Minnesota, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Celebrities have very much, become bona fide brands. They've become international global brands.
It takes a village to build a brand, you know, the Oscars and those thank you speeches. But first, let's do the numbers. In a late session sell-off, the Dow Industrial is off 57 points today, a third of 1%, ended things at 16,639. The NASDAQ up 8 points, 0.2%, 4590. The S&P 500 dropped 3 points, 0.2%, 1948. Volatile week it was, but the major indices ended in the black. The Dow up 1.3%, the NASDAQ up 2.2%, the S&P 500 climbed 1.5% for the 5 days gone by. Weight Watchers lost plenty of weight today after the company reported disappointing fourth quarter revenues yesterday, despite Oprah's much-discussed investment. Weight Watchers took off 29%. Nutrisystem took a hit as well, declined 12% there. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note, that is the 10-year Treasury note, rose to 1.76%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Captricity, cloud software designed to replace the manual process of capturing and transforming handwritten documents into digital data. Captricity helps insurance, healthcare, and government and nonprofit organizations go digital without disruption. More at Captricity.com. And by the Society for Human Resource Management, new competency-based certifications designed to make the new workplace work. More at shrmcertification.org.
If you miss something on the air, you can hit our podcast. The link is at marketplace.org or try our Facebook page, Marketplace APM. Like us, comment to us, whatever you want. Just let us know you're there.
When
Want to tell your story? Be part of our listener-generated series, I've Always Wondered, featuring questions from you about the economy. Submit your story and check out the ones we've already done at marketplace.org.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Oscars are this Sunday, but there's going to be a whole lot more going on inside the Dolby Theater over in Hollywood than just acceptance speeches. The all-white field of nominees adds an undercurrent to that show that is going to be interesting to watch, to say the least. Wesley Morris writes on movies and culture for the New York Times. Wesley, it's good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Kai. What's happening?
Not much, man, except, you know, I'm all set for the Oscars, which I'm assuming
you're set?
You are. I am set. I'm totally set. I got my bracket filled out and everything.
Ooh.
There's no wasting time around here. But listen, you're the trained professional, and I want to talk to you about him for a second.
Yes.
I want to talk, first of all, about what you think it's going to be like, given the contretemps this year, shall we say.
Oh, I don't think it's going to be weird at all.
Oh, come on. All right.
No, it's going to be extremely uncomfortable. And I've already begun thinking about how this Chris Rock monologue is going to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether he's going to play to the house or play to the audience outside, you know, the theater, I don't know. I do think it's going to be interesting given what everybody's been watching happen with the Republican debates.
Well, so that's the question. Is he playing to the house where it will be awkward if he pokes them with too fine a stick, which he will? Or is he playing to the larger crowd and the larger debate, as you were alluding to, with the election and race in society today?
Hopefully he can find a way to do both. I think that this is going to be the biggest stand-up performance of his career.
Mm-hmm. Chris Rock, though, is not going to be the only person talking about this from the stage. Do you think the celebrities assembled will weigh in on this one? They must have to.
There's a way for Chris Rock to do what he's going to do, but I think at some point it has to turn into a production that smoothly aligns with the giving out of awards.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't keep dinging every winner for not being of color when that's not their fault. You know, if you're going to, I mean, I looked at the list of presenters and that's a whole separate category of the people they've brought in to either like implicitly wag their fingers at the lack of inclusion in the nominees this year or to explicitly do that.
Yeah. All right. So to the question of who's going to win, who do you like, first of all, in the big categories?
I think that the thing about the Best Picture contest, to just go back to that for a second, is that it's split between The Big Short, Spotlight, and The Revenant. The Revenant will probably win, but I can also imagine either a backlash against Alejandro González Iñárritu, the director, who will probably win his second directing Oscar in a row, which hasn't happened in, I don't know, 60 years?
Yeah.
A long time.
What do you think about Leo and his little golden statue? Is he going to get it?
That will be the scandal of all time. If you, I mean, it just will be. I mean, it is the clearest path to a win he's ever had.
Right.
Of those five guys, Matt Damon is my
person my
heart is with.
I confess my man crush on Matt Damon right here and now. I'm good with that.
DiCaprio's good for me. I'm happy to see him.
Wesley Morris writes on movies and culture and all kinds of stuff at the New York Times. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Happy Oscars, guys.
All right, so I asked Wesley about the winners Sunday night and how those acceptance speeches might go, given the vibe around the Oscars. One thing we do know is that they are going to be shorter this year. The Academy thinks it's finally found a way to rein in all the thank yous and shout outs because being famous today comes with a whole modern celebrity support system. Marketplace's Adrian Hill has that story.
There was a time when Oscar speeches were simpler. Here's Broderick Crawford's list of thank yous when he picked up the Best Actor Award for All the King's Men.
I'd like to thank all of you and especially thank God.
And Hattie McDaniel's thank you when she won Best Supporting Actress for Gone with the Wind.
This is one of the happiest moments of my life. And I want to thank each one of you who had a part in selecting me for one of the awards. for your kindness. It has made me feel very, very humble.
So how do we go from that to this? Patricia Arquette accepting the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for Boyhood.
Thank you to the Academy, to my beautiful, powerful nominees, to IFC, Jonathan Sarang, John Sloth, Kathleen Sutherland, Molly Madden, David DiCamillo, our whole cast and our crew. To my heroes, volunteers, and experts who've helped me bring ecological sanitation to the developing world with GiveLove.org.
To be fair, winners have more time now. Back in 1949, they had about 15 seconds. This year, they'll get 45. But there's another shift at work. Today, the celebrity team has exploded. Beyond the usual agents, managers, and publicists, it's more like an NFL team.
Celebrities have very much, become bona fide brands. They've become international global brands. And as a result, the teams are much larger.
Jitender Sadev studies celebrity branding and marketing at USC. He says the modern team can involve
voice coaches, image consultants, behavioral consultants,
stylists, acting coaches, and assistants, personal chefs, plastic surgeons, philanthropy consultants.
There's a lot of support that goes into, building and managing, especially the larger global celebrity brands.
And then there are all the people behind celebrity brand extensions, their books, fashion lines, lifestyle blogs. They all need staff. Joe Piazza, author of Celebrity Inc., How Famous People Make Money, says there are also some delicate reasons celebrity teams are growing.
I think it's because celebrities have gotten a lot needier.
She says some of today's stars require more handholding because many of them are famous for being famous, not for being talented.
To remain in the public eye, it does take this huge team, this huge entourage, this huge celebrity industrial complex to keep them interesting and allow them to keep making money.
And some of that money goes right back into funding the industrial complex. Percentages for managers, agents, and lawyers. Monthly checks to makeup artists, masseuses, personal trainers, social media managers. And, says Sadev,
that sort of team is only going to keep growing as the stakes become higher and as, celebrity in the landscape becomes more competitive.
And as the team grows, so does the snooze factor of award show thank yous, which is one reason the Academy this year is introducing the thank you scroll. Names running across the bottom of the screen during an acceptance speech, thanking people the winners have chosen ahead of time. The hope is that it will give winners like Patricia Arquette more time to spend on the interesting parts of their speech.
It's our time to have wage equality once and for all.
Instead of getting played off the stage deep into a never-ending list of names.
I just want to... Oh, here we go. Okay,
I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Tom Cruise, I love you, brother. I love you, man. Derek Rose.
This final note on the way out today, the Senate is going to do what it wants with the vacancy on the Supreme Court, but businesses do have bottom lines to worry about. Dow Chemical said today it's going to pay $835 million to settle an antitrust case that is pending before the court because of, and this is a quote, growing political uncertainties due to recent events with the Supreme Court. That is, they spent almost $1 billion because a 4-4 court without Scalia, in their perception, would be less company friendly.
Marketplace is supported by MailChimp, offering MailChimp Pro, an enterprise-level email marketing platform with features like multivariate testing and advanced segmentation. MailChimp.com/pro. And by Talkdesk cloud-based call center software. Chosen by over 1,000 businesses, Talkdesk offers enterprise performance and one-click integrations with Salesforce and more. Talkdesk.com.
All right, Friday, got to go. The Dow off 57 points today, a third of 1%. The Nasdaq gained 8 points, 0.2%. The S&P 500 dropped 3 points, 0.2%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitar Nieves. Deborah Clark is the vice president and executive producer. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Have a good weekend, everybody. We will see you right back here on Monday. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.